In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to
20
the
minutes
lobby.
After 5, it's time for Pass the Popcorn. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us in studio, and we'll talk movies. Sure. But first, Alan, congratulations on moving in to the championship round, the finals of Downtown Madness.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. This is year 7?
Yeah.
This is my first time in the finals.
What a journey along the way. I mean, you had to knock off a couple of three broadcast legends, really. Tim Throckmorton.
Yeah.
Bill Green.
Yeah.
Former Downtown Madness champion Bob Lucy.
That's right.
And then nationally known columnist and Twitter god David Roth.
Yeah, no, it's that one was tough because again, and we've talked about this on the air before. I'm a big fan of David Roth. I think his writing for Deadspin is phenomenal. His work on the Deadcast is great, and the best vocalist Van Halen ever had.
Now, here's who Jeff Daniels beat along the way. He also had a challenging route. Former MTV VJ Alan Hunter, Loretta Swit of MASH, Bryan Cranston, and John O'Hurley.
Oh, see, yeah, like that's like the
and Red Sox legend Rico Petrocelli.
Well, sure. But yeah, like, that's what, two former champions that he stomped on his way to the top.
Yeah. Yeah. His second time in the final four, the funky four, but first time going to the championship.
That's great.
Woo. Voting open right now, already several hundred votes in. I believe your people have been out doing their thing. When do you let them out of the dark room?
it's championship or bust this year. It's been made very clear that I need a win or that door never opens again.
Who knew Stella could type?
It took some doing, but yeah, they'll learn anything.
Put that paw down.
Yep, we just made the buttons big. This is just like two buttons. There's two buttons on the thing, presses it, and it's much like our work with Kibbles and Picks.
There you go. All right, now if you win, are you available to join us tomorrow at the top of the show? That's not a requirement of winners, but we like to do that.
Sure. Is it? It is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
It's
24 hours, right, Carrie?
Okay.
Yes, that's all we have.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I should be able to.
Yeah. If not, Stella will be fine.
Well, and I can certainly make arrangements to be here at some point, but I don't know, just because Tuesday's press day for The Edge, so sometimes things get a little hung up. But
what's more important?
Well, I mean, I think we both know the answer to that. but at the very least, I'll see if I can't be here in person. I'll give you a holler.
It's a classic battle too, because it's the big name Hollywood Broadway star against an anchor. I mean, part of the Downtown family. Nobody's been on more than you 2 days a week since day one.
Yes, it's the beginning.
For God's sake. So I love it. I love the matchup. It's intriguing.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it all plays out.
And I believe part of the deal is if you do win, there's sort of a job swap. For a week, Jeff is going to write for The Edge and edit, and you will be playing Atticus Finch on Broadway.
Dear God.
You've been in To Kill a Mockingbird.
I've been in the show. I'm familiar. but yeah, yikes. I'm still a good 15 years away from being able to pull off Atticus Finch, I think.
You play Boo Radley. It's not a big leap.
No, I mean, they're pretty much the same dude, right?
Same guy. Same guy, no question about it. Hey, Boo. All right, let's talk movies. You saw two. Do we start with the new twist on the boss's story?
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Yeah, right.
I was regrettably unable to attend the preview screening, but I heard that it was a really great time. Like, I heard folks had a fantastic time at the movie on Thursday.
Yes, the two directors were there. Did a little Q&A prior, an intro of the movie, and a Q&A prior to the movie.
Oh, that's so cool!
Yeah, it was a very nice touch. First time for one of these movie nights that we've had the directors be there for the movie.
Yeah, because I saw like it was all over, they were all over social media, like just like wandering the streets of Bangor. Yeah.
Yes,
which is fantastic. Like I love the fact that that was something that was able to that they were able to do because, you know, I think any real depth of understanding of Mr. King's work, I think an understanding of this town goes a long way. I really do. Mm. You know, and especially a movie like this one. Which is basically inspired by him living in a house just down the road there in Orrington. You know what I mean? So it's like this is all drawn from real life, and so it's so cool that the people who sort of brought this story to the screen were able to kind of get a firsthand look at some of these things. So that was pretty neat.
All right, how was the movie itself?
It was different than I was anticipating. And that's a good thing, I think. I've already seen some of the the King purists out there express some issues with the way certain things were handled with the movie. But here's the thing: the novel came out in 1983. The movie's 30 years old. You know, it's like I don't need to see the same movie again.
No,
the core fundamental parts of the story were very present in this movie. And the truth is, you need to find ways to tease out that meaning in different ways, because if you don't, what you wind up with is like the Carrie remake from a few years ago, where it's like, it's beat for beat the same movie. Right. And it's like, and it just feels unnecessary regardless of how well it might be made.
And for King purists, apparently he was very cool with the changes.
Well, yeah. And it's like, but, and that's the thing. It's like, and he's someone who like, He's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna be shy about expressing his opinions when it comes to these movies. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the, for instance, the Kubrick's The Shining is considered to be a masterpiece of 20th century cinema, but it wasn't his story, and Mr. King made his feelings clear mm-hmm. about that. So it's like, yeah. For those who might be unfamiliar, I'll do a quick synopsis of the story. It's the story of the Creed family. Lewis Creed, played by Jason Clark, a friend of downtown.
Yes, indeed.
Who
he called me mate.
who moves his family from Boston to the small town of Ludlow, Maine. They buy a farmhouse on a huge plot of land, like forest for acres and acres. And just as an attempt to get away from the tension and the drama of the city. But when they get there, they find out that they're property plays host to the local pet cemetery. You know, they see a sort of a parade of children's with masks carrying a dog into the woods to be, you know, laid to rest. Mm. And they're like, well, that's creepy and weird, but you know, whatever. It's like small town tradition. Their minds are sort of put at ease when they encounter their crusty, gruff neighbor Judd, played by John Lithgow, who's great in this. But as it turns out, there's something more in the woods, something sinister, something that well, we'll just put it this way: something that makes what we all believed to be a one-way journey, you know, gives you a return ticket, as it were.
Yes.
As certain decisions are made by Lewis and his family, when a tragedy strikes, he's forced to make a decision, and he's drawn to this sort of sinister force, this unseen whatever, into the woods. And he makes some choices that will irrevocably affect not only his life, but the life of his family. And the life of pretty much all of the people in Ludlow and his loved ones. I'm not going to go any
That's
more.
Enough.
Yeah,
That's
I'm not going to go any more specific. Yeah, the performances are great. Jason Clarke, he's so talented. Like, and it's nice to see him in this kind of part. Just because, like, I feel like there's been a run where he's been kind of sort of stuck in these sort of. I hesitate to use the term cuckold, but like that sort of like figure, this person who's being like betrayed by someone close to him, and for him to be able to kind of shoulder the load a little bit more narratively. You know, the last time we saw that was something like Chappaquiddick, but even that had some sort of, you know, there's that sort of looming shadow of a superior figure, like, that kind of covered the whole thing, where he sort of he held his own with this one and kind of led the way, which is really nice. Amy Simetz, who plays his wife, she's also very good. The kids were very good too. The young lady, Ellie, played by Jace Peterson, she's like 9 years old. Like, she was great. And the twins who play the younger son, they were very good as well. And then, you know, there's John Lithgow, who, bless his heart, absolutely 100% the right choice, did not try to do the accent. Like, there was a whiff of it, like, just like a hint, but it was like, it wasn't that sort of weird
Fred Gwynn.
Yeah. Who, again, is iconic in this part, but again, like, it's the his performance is not necessarily elevated by
the Murder, She Wrote accent.
Yes. You know, it's not Cabot Cove, Herman. But yeah, and the filmmaker, it's a really well-made movie, and it's different from the original in that it's much more structured. It's a much subtler movie than I think the original, which was very over the top and bordered on campy in some places, mm-hmm. To its benefit. Like, I think some of the best King adaptations from that era are the ones that really, like, went broad and really leaned into the sort of larger themes and didn't worry too much about nuance. But this one, it's a much like quieter movie, I think, than that one was. But some beautiful, beautiful shots, some wonderful stage pictures, screen pictures that they managed. I will say, I did have a small issue with the actual destination beyond the destination. When we got to the sort of burial spot, it felt a little soundstagey to me. And the only reason it really clicked was because everything else was so very lush and very present in a way that bit simply wasn't. And I don't know if that was just a filming choice, because I can't imagine they built the set on a soundstage specifically for that one bit. Maybe they did. But for whatever reason, it just didn't seem to quite click with the rest of the film in terms of the aesthetic. But again, that's a nitpick, really. Like, that's so much of the movie was so atmospheric and some great scares. But again, like, really mined tension more than some of the other films did. So I was delighted. Again, I think a lot of people are going to have trouble letting go of the 1989. Film version, and I get it. People have a real strong connection to that movie around here, because it was made around here,
right?
You know, and it's like, and we're always going to have that connection, and so I understand if you like that earlier movie more than this one. I'm a little less able to get on board with someone saying it's an actively superior movie to this one. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't necessarily think it's that much better, but I understand if you like it more.
How about Shazam? What did you think of that?
I had such a good freaking time at this movie. It's funny because when I was out Thursday night, we were on our way back. We went to see The Best of the Second City down at the Criterion in Bar Harbor. And we were driving back with some friends, and I mentioned that I was going to see Shazam, and our friends were unfamiliar. And so I started talking about the character and the supporting and tertiary casts and all that stuff. And I've been talking for like about 5 minutes, and I'm like, I sound like an insane person. Like, if you don't have the context for the whole, I'm going to say it one time, Captain Marvel universe, because that was the original name of the character. And I know that there's another Captain Marvel who had a movie come out just a couple of weeks ago, and I understand, and we're calling him Shazam now, and that's great. He's always going to be Captain Marvel to me. And editorializing, I'm climbing down off the soapbox. I just needed to make it clear that that was how I felt about it. But the basic gist is, you've got a young boy by the name of Billy Batson. He's a teenager, played by Asher Angel. And he's a foster kid, runaway, who's trying to track down his mother, who he lost. They were separated when he was just a child, and they were never able to reunite. And so he's been on this quest to find his mom for the years since. So he's kind of a troubled kid, and he runs away from foster homes and all that. And he's in Philadelphia. He gets picked up by the cops, and they're like, okay, you got one more chance. And so he gets taken in by this foster family. Big Rainbow Coalition type family. There's a sweet little sassy like little sister type, and then there's the high end overachiever, and then there's the largely silent kid and the hardcore gamer kid, and then there's his roommate, the young Freddie Freeman, played by Jack Grazer, who's so good. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Freddie Freeman, a kid with a limp and a really sharp mouth, and so we find Billy in this situation. He's like, he's just marking time till he can get away. But he winds up defending Freddie from some bullies, and in the course of escaping, finds himself transported to the mysterious underground lair of the wizard Shazam, played by Jimon Hansu, because of course he is.
I love it.
Who was also in Captain Marvel, just by the way. So I thought that was a nice little bit of synergy. But Shazam has been seeking a champion upon whom to bestow his magical powers and defend the world from the seven deadly sins, the personifications of the seven deadly sins. And the reason there's an urgency to this is because a gentleman by the name of Dr. Thaddeus Savannah, played by Mark Strong, who back in his childhood, back in the mid-70s, had also been drawn to Shazam's lair and given a test to determine whether or not he was worthy to receive the powers of Shazam, a test that he failed.
Oh.
And so he was thrust back into the real world with a father and brother who did not care or respect, who did not care for or respect him. And so he devoted his life to determining how to return to Shazam's lair, devoted endless resources and scientific acumen to that project, and finally made his way back and took command of the seven deadly sins, the personifications therein, and the powers that they granted, and headed back into the real world to wield said power about how you would expect with someone who had spent some 30 years obsessing over his respective sense of worthiness or lack thereof. So Billy, when he receives these powers and says the name of the wizard, Shazam, he is transformed into the champion, who is played by Zachary Levi, best Chuck. Known as TV's Chuck.
Well, I love that show.
I did too. And Zach Levi is great here. I wondered if he was going to be able to pull off superhero. And I think 9 times out of 10, he wouldn't. But this one, he very much can. So he basically becomes he's in an adult body with all the Superman analog powers that come with it. Super strength, invulnerability. They're not sure if he can fly. There's actually some pretty great montage scenes where they try to figure out if he can fly or not. And he also has lightning powers and all this stuff, super speed, the whole shebang. He's a 14-year-old kid who's in an adult body with superpowers. So things get a little weird in a couple places. Buying beer and go to strip clubs and that sort of stuff. Because he's got Freddy by his side because Freddy is a superhero obsessive. And so Billy doesn't know anything about being a superhero. So he's got Freddy to kind of fill him in on the sort of details, what it means. But as you might imagine, Dr. Savannah, not super jazzed that someone else was chosen to be Shazam's champion. And so he sets out to take Shazam's power for himself. And therein lies the central conflict of our film. And we could probably leave it there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other stuff, but we'll stop it right there. Rich, I see you over there, and I can tell you're thinking, geez, Alan, kind of sounds like Big only with superheroes. Well, Rich, that's because it is. I mean, it is. It's like instead of a Zoltan machine, it's weird Jimon Hansu wizard in a subway basement. Like but it's big. It's like it's a child placed in a new adult body. And all that entails, but with an added layer of superpowers on top of that. And it's just so fun.
Well, the trailers look great.
It's funny. Like the dialogue is sharp. Like it's got that wonderful blend of Like, it's really quippy, and it's, you know, injected with plenty of, like, teenage boy humor, which, as you know, is among my favorite types of humors.
Right up my alley.
But it also has, like, a wonderful sort of sentimental side, like, a really real wonderful sense of heart and family, and some great action sequences, including a few that sort of, you know, take some jabs at the superhero genre in general, some moments which are really fun, and it's just such a wonderful counterpoint to the sort of weird, grimdark cul-de-sac that the DC Extended Universe kind of found itself in. They've been working their way out of it the last couple of years. Like, Wonder Woman was a great example, and Aquaman especially was kind of, you know, just a, you know, kind of trying to escape the very wrong lessons they took away from the success of Christopher Nolan's Batman movies. It feels like we're starting to kind of course correct a little bit from that. But in terms of just sheer joyfulness, like, this is one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen, because it captures the one thing that's sort of central, the central idea of why we love comic books in the first place, because it's this wonderful escapist sort of sense of wish fulfillment almost, because it's essentially like you're putting a child's brain in command of a superhero's body. Like, that's what you dreamed of when you were reading comic books when you were a kid. It's like, oh man, what if I could do this? What if I was this guy? And you basically get to watch that unfold on screen. It's just, it's super, it's such a great, great time. And it goes deep into the Captain Marvel mythos in a way that I'm pretty sure I was the only person in the theater who was really digging in. I bet Carrie would have been there with me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I read a lot of Captain Marvel as a kid.
Yeah.
And we can have this discussion.
Yeah, we're gonna have to talk off air a little bit.
Yeah, I got some questions.
Yeah.
But you enjoyed it.
I did. It was so good, and I had a good time. Sheridan had a good time. Before I forget, like, the performances need to be addressed, because Levi's awesome. Mark Strong is one of the best, like, superhero villains, like, I've seen. Like, he's great. And the kids are really good. This Asher Angel kid is good. And Jack Glazer, man, Grazer, he is so good. Like, he played Eddie in It, and he's one of those kids. But yeah, he's like, you get from some of those It kids, you get that sort of like Stand By Me, like explorers vibe, where it's like you see these kids performing and you're like, oh no, these, like, I'm going to be watching these kids like in movies for like 35 years. Yeah. Like, they're just going to be like, they're already this good. We're talking like River Phoenix and like Leonardo DiCaprio, like these kids are going to grow up to be those guys. And it's just, I'm really looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Al.
Hey, my pleasure.
And good luck, Downtown Madness. Alan Adams
Woo!
Versus Atticus Finch.
Vote for me.
There you go.